Hey, everybody. I'm Aya, the head of the podcasting committee this year.
Hi, I'm Ade, and I am just one of the team.
Today, we are here with a author, and that is Bevan Adams.
Hi.
Okay, Bevan, can you introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, hi. My name is Bevan Adams. I'm currently a second year here, majoring in global studies and sociology.
Ooh, awesome. Okay, awesome. Great.
So to get started, like you said, we're talking about your amazing paper that you submitted to us called Rising of the Korean Wave in the United States of America from 2017 to now. So I guess, can you kind of introduce us to the topic, kind of what got you into it, kind of a couple things you go through in your paper?
Yeah, so this paper is mainly focused on the Korean Wave, or Hallyu, if you know it by that term, and just basically the prominence it's had in the United States, especially since 2017, but it mainly focuses more on 2020 and onwards, focusing on the COVID-19 pandemic and the recent cultural movements here in America, and how those kind of actions and events and occurrences have allowed for like cross-cultural communication to kind of rise and allow for Korean cultural items to like be more prominent here in the United States. And I'm a global studies major, and my region is Asia. So at the time of this paper, I was taking a class called Asia 72, Transnational Korea, Literature, Film, and Pop Culture. So I was already in a class that was, like, focusing on Korean culture stuff. And I'm like, wait, how am I taking a class on this? Like, this is obviously something, like, people want to discuss and, like, are interested in here. So I'm like, how did we get to that point?
That class, what did you say it was called?
It was called Transnational Korea, Literature, Film, and Pop Culture.
Oh, so it went through, like, the whole thing.
Yeah, so we went from, like, 1900s onward, and we were reading, like, short stories. We were watching television shows and watching movies. And, like, it was cool because we watched movies from, like, the 60s. So it was, like, black and white and, like, super fast. But it was focusing on the immigrant and emigrant's experience in and out of Korea. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, why were people moving out of the country? Why were people moving into the country? And then also, like, what do their works mean? Like, what does it mean for those experiences?
Wow. And then the 60s, I'm such a bad granddaughter because my granddad fought in the Korean War. Oh, my Lord. Is that at the, I'm assuming that's after occupation, correct? That's way after.
Oh, way. Okay, Japanese occupation was 1910 to 1935.
The 30s. Okay, cool, cool, cool. Because I was just like,
1945, yeah.
So that definitely, like, that influenced everything. Was that part of a lot of why people were moving away, or was it economic?
Yeah, a lot of it was, like, it just depends on the time period. A lot of it was economic. Again, Korea wasn't, like, a big economic, like, powerhouse until just, like, the past 20 years. So a lot of it was, like, moving for better opportunities. But we also talked a lot about, like, if you ever heard of the comfort woman, it was, like, being forcibly taken out of the country. Mm-hmm. So we focused on a lot of different perspectives. A lot of it was also, like, trying to find work in different countries. Japanese occupation was, like, going to Japan and facing discrimination there versus Japanese people coming to Korea and, like, what that meant for them. So,
yeah. Wow. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to see if I can take that. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
It's a freshman seminar, so it's I know, it sucks, but I was like, put me in that class. Like, sign me up.
Yeah, so, okay. So, we're just going to talk about the beginning of your paper, your introduction first. So, you basically already answered what got you into the Hallyu wave, like, how you thought of this paper, but we were wondering, like, you mentioned BTS, Parasite, and Squid Games. Mm-hmm. Like, are you a K-pop fan? Did you watch Parasite, Squid Games? Like, what did you think? And, you know, like, what's your...
All of it.
Yeah. Just a lot.
The
like,
background, the story.
Korean,
yeah.
Everything. Yes. How'd you get into Korean media?
Yeah. So I started hearing about it just like randomly. I love TikTok and Instagram. Like, I'm on there all the time. It's really bad. I need to stop. But like, I started seeing like mentions of like BTS. I'm like, who are they? And I'm like, I know they're from Korea. So for a really long time, I was just like, no, I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to understand it. But it got to a point, they had their, like, big concert in 2021 in, like, L.A. and Las Vegas. It was, like, Permission to Dance or whatever. And I was getting, like, thirst traps of BTS.
And they were like, getting to you slowly.
Yeah. And I was like, I've never seen these people before. I'm like, who are they? And I hate to be that person where I was like, yeah, they were cute. That's why I, like, looked into
them. That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. But, like, I think that's when I slowly started to realize, like, wow, they were able to sell, like, a stadium in L.A., mm-hmm. and I don't know who they are, like, mm-hmm. let me go into this. And so I started listening a little bit, and I'm like, okay, like, this is solid. And then I'm very lucky where my stepdad, he is a very big movie person. Like, he loves media. He, like, bought me my first CD when, like, he moved in. Like, it's very cute. Like, that's how we kind of connect. So he loved Parasite. Like, he saw it in theaters. He loved it. And, again, I was kind of like, I don't watch a lot of movies, so I was kind of like, whatever. But he, like, made me watch it. And then when Squid Game came out, he was kind of like, kind of the same thing. Like, you should watch it. It's cool. And then, again, it was all over my social media. I didn't want to, like, miss out on it. Yeah. So that's kind of how I got into it. Like, and I definitely enjoy it. I've listened to a lot more. Like, I've been to a couple of dance classes for, like, K-pop songs. Just because it's, like, a good way for me to, like, get exercise. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's just kind of how I got into it. Like, I was kind of, like, wanted to check it out because it was all over my social media. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it got there, but it did.
So, yes. So after you, I guess, kind of got into a little bit more of Korean media and, like, BTS, I guess, would you consider yourself a K-pop fan, a K-pop stan now? Or were you just like, I dip my toes, I like BTS, it's cool.
Yeah, no, I definitely like a lot more groups now. I definitely say I'm a fan. I've fallen out of it the past year just because I'm so busy. I feel like you have to, like,
you
have
a schedule.
Yeah, yeah, there's so much stuff that they release.
Very fast.
I think I talked about it a little bit in my essay, but it's like, they want you to get involved. They want you to have that parasocial relationship. I'm like, I don't got time.
No, ma'am.
I'm in college. And I'm like, I like the songs. I listen to them on my headphones. But I'm like, I can't be watching all, like, the reality TV show stuff they got going on.
Oh, my goodness. But with those, like, all the media and, like, kind of seeing how that media cycle works versus, like, what we do here, like, with our music and our movies and media and things like that, how would you say the two different, like, cultures of media differ?
Yeah, I think mainly focusing on music, when we have, like, a Western artist here, they'll release an album. That album is probably, like, 18 songs, like, a solid 45 minutes to an hour. And then you don't expect anything from them for another 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like, you give them their time to create their craft. And in Korea, those groups, like, it's just a lot more expedited. So they're releasing albums every couple of months, but they're only, like, 4 to 6 songs long. They're, like, 15 minutes to listen through. Mm-hmm. And just, like, I think they're just, like, they want that commercialism to go through, and they want their idols to be on air and getting as much publicity as they want. So it's like, we're going to work them, and we're going to just release as much music as possible. And then I think also just, like, the main difference between, like, our television shows is, like, our shows now, like, our seasons aren't super long. They're maybe, like, 8 to 12 episodes. If you have sitcoms, 30 minutes an episode. Drama, maybe an hour. Over in Korea, like, every episode's going to be an hour and 15 minutes. And their seasons are 16 episodes. Like, it's just a very standard, like, they have what they're going to do. They're always going to follow the script. So, and they have a lot more, I think, stereotypes they play into. Their television shows are a lot more, like, warm-hearted and lighthearted than ours are. Ours are darker, a little bit more focused on, like,
gritty.
Yeah, the gritty is like, ooh, Riverdale. Like, we're going to go.
Not
yeah.
Riverdale.
They go in, like, 10 different directions. Yeah. You never, like, know we're gonna what's swap going it. On.
But, like, over there, they're focusing, like, they have those stereotypes of, like, the girl falls in love with the boy, the boy falls in love with the girl. And then they do have their dramas that do differ, but you're mainly going to find those rom-coms over there, which I think is a lot different than here. Like, I can barely find a rom-com to, like, watch on Netflix. Yeah. That's a television show, not just a movie.
Yeah.
Your paper discusses the Hallyu Wave, and we were just wondering, could you give us and, like, the listeners an explanation of what the Korean Wave is? And
like, so then versus now, like, kind of how it's flown.
So the Korean Wave was mainly, like, it's a government thing. Like, the government really, like, pushed this wave as a way of, like, soft power diplomacy, cultural diplomacy. And so the Hallyu Wave started probably back in the 90s, but mainly in, like, Asian countries, so, like, China, Japan, and then other, like, Southeast Asian countries, where it's Korean cultural items such as music, film, television shows, even, like, art, stuff like that, clothing, and they're broadcasting it in other countries. So they're putting their songs, like, out on their version of Spotify or, like, putting on the radio. The television shows are going to, like, the, like, streaming platforms or even just wherever you play television. I'm so young. Like, I forgot where we used to put them on.
The broadcast networks.
Broadcast networks. Uh-huh.
On the thing.
And so it's really started in the 90s as a way for Korea to, like, slowly grow those, like, diplomatic ties with countries. And then as the years have progressed, Korea has become more of a developed country. They've started shifting their focus to Western countries, so, like, the United States, Europe, stuff like that. And they push it more just, like, in that general vicinity. And so, again, it's, like, using those cultural items, bringing them to the West, and using it as a way to, like, get power in those countries. So that's kind of just, like, a very basic definition of Hallyu or the Korean Wave is just getting those cultural items into other countries and out of Korea.
Mm-hmm. And could you also, like, give people an explanation of soft power? Because, like, not everyone's into politics like we are.
I know.
And, like, I get what you're saying, but, you know.
Yeah. So soft power, when we think about, like, political ties between countries or, like, diplomatic ties, you think normally, like, you're making agreements and alliances based off economic power or based off of, like, joint military exercises, stuff like that. So soft power is more of a way of, like, kind of, like, inching your way into a country and using something that's not, like, apparently dangerous or anything like that. So you're not using guns, you're not using money. You're using something like television shows or K-pop idols to go into those countries and kind of start making a network for you and getting them in there. And then because of that soft power, you start to have those diplomatic ties with other countries. Mm-hmm. So it's just a way to, like, start making those alliances just by doing that. Because I don't know if you've noticed, but, like, Korea definitely sends their idols to political discussions.
Yeah.
BTS was in the White House, but they also have actors and stuff going to, like, Asian summits and stuff like that. So it's, like, they're using those idols and their popularity, both in Korea and in other countries, to get what they want.
Yeah, because I think BTS also was, like, at the UN.
They were at the UN. I remember
They're Korean cultural ambassadors.
Yeah.
They almost, like, didn't do military service because
they almost got out of it. Yeah. But then, like,
they were like, oh, sorry.
The national politics were like, no, you gotta go.
Like,
you still gotta go. Sorry, we get it. You're, like, super famous, but
you gotta do it.
You have to do. You're like everyone else still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So, your paper says it's answering one question. That it's trying to answer one question, and the question was, what has changed in American society in the past 5 years to facilitate the widespread rise of popularity of Asian cultural products from the Korean Wave?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, basically, how did you land on, like, that time frame and, like, what about the past 5 years and, like, what you've seen that's, like, this is definitely when it happened?
Yeah, I think as I kept looking through all, like, my pieces of data, it was very much looking through, again, cultural items and then, like, articles based on those and then social media posts. I started to just really notice, like, the popularity did begin to rise in the past 5 years. And so that's kind of why I focus on that time point. And then I just realized, like, the effects of COVID-19 was, like, just huge. And it led to a lot of stuff. It led to cultural movements like Black Lives Matter being just more apparent in media. Same with the, like, Stop Asian Hate. And so I think that was something where I was, like, I think this, like, time period was a catalyst for other things, which led to an opening of, like, people being more connected through social media and, like, internet. And, like, looking for community, and that's why, like, I focus on that, because I was, like, I think an average day American is more likely to see it in this time period than probably, like, before 2015.
And social media has always been so close with Korean media, especially K-pop, to where it's, like, seeing how quickly, like, in the time frame that you've put in your paper, seeing how that really has sped up, especially because we were all kind of forced to be on our phones most of the time, especially during lockdown, that kind of accelerated, like, people who wouldn't normally engage with, like, those spaces, those groups, those fandoms, all of a sudden are like, who is this? Oh, what's an army?
Oh my god.
Who's the Luna?
The troops.
Who is Luna, and why do I need to stan them?
Gosh. Oh my god, I do remember the Stan Luna. I miss when people just call me Stan Luna.
You put out of nowhere. Out of nowhere.
Do you remember that one, like, video of that guy who was in, like, Big Time Rush and he was talking?
Yes.
The Gustavo
guy.
And he was like, Stan Luna. And everyone was like,
everyone lost it. It was such a weird, weird time. Like, especially, I'm glad you brought up the pandemic, because that was kind of one of the parts that stood out to me, because I was like, yeah, because especially with, like, the comfort shows, Parasite was huge. Train to Busan, which I think had came out the year prior, became even bigger because everyone was, like, watching it on Netflix. Yeah. And it was amazing. If you haven't seen it, you should watch Train to Busan.
Gong Yoo, like, having him as the lead, they knew exactly what
they were doing. Oh, they did it. But it was so... It really was, like, a boom in K-dramas, just K content in general.
And one of the things that you said in your paper was Korean shows shifted from a niche cultural taste to mainstream culture, and lockdown led to an increase in media viewership, especially specifically on Netflix and mm-hmm. you know, Parasite and everything. And I guess one, I wanted to ask, do you have a favorite K-drama?
Oh my gosh, I love My Beloved Summer.
Oh,
I like cried. It was so cute.
Oh my god,
I love that. I think to touch back on what you said before about like the differences in American media, American shows and things like that, and Korean media and shows, is that it's so much more tender mm-hmm. and like you can watch, like, how many episodes, like, almost to the next episode, and they haven't even made any physical contact.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't even held hands. Yes. Or the hand grab from, like, 10 different angles.
Or it's like, not the grab.
Oh, my gosh. It is 2 minutes.
And it's like they're staring at each other, and they will turn and look, and it's like, are you holding my hand? I'm holding your hand. Like, it's so dramatic, but something about that is just so touching. It's so heartwarming. It's like less is more, or like I've seen people online be like, it's like the female gaze.
Yeah,
yes. Like,
yes. Yes. So like that.
Probably exactly
written by a woman.
They're
like
all definitely written yes. by women.
Yes, because it's just so heartfelt, and a lot of it is like conflict, like mm-hmm. spoken conflict based. So I just,
communication.
Yeah, oh gosh,
yes.
Girl, that. Walking in at the wrong moment, seeing something, asking yes! no questions,
yes! walking out,
and then walk out and delete the number, avoid them until they meet together in the rain, and they
with
hug the hug.
That's what it is for all those like reconnecting mm-hmm. dramas. It's always like miscommunication. Mm-hmm. They just never spoke about it, and they just yep. ignored each other, and then yep. they like finally talk about it like 20 years later, like Buki,
we could have solved this.
Just helping the girl out.
Yeah, like it would literally be like helping a girl up that fell. Yeah. And they'll be like, the betrayal. It's just, it's
like, what
so...
was he supposed to do? Like, just kick her while she's already down?
Right. Yes. No, like, God forbid you be nice to another one. Oh my goodness. And then also about like kind of like the internet and like more K media, from your paper, you referenced the TikTok K drama community.
Yeah.
And another piece was the K-pop industry itself relies heavily on digital content to gain popularity with fans, which can lead to fans meeting each other as well as unintentionally forming parasocial relationships, one-sided relationships where one person extends emotional energy, interest in time with K-pop idols. So mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, kind of how you did in your paper.
Yeah, so I think we talked about it a little bit earlier with all those like reality shows. Mm-hmm. So BTS kind of started with Run BTS, or maybe Seventeen did with their show, mm-hmm. but because okay, yeah. the Seventeen one is crazy. They have yes. so many episodes. It's so popular. It's funny. But now all these idols have these reality shows on top of all their other stuff, but they're always on... I've noticed, like, there's this big wave of, like, TikTok right now where they're always mm-hmm. posting their dance on TikTok and they're, yes. like, performing with people from the other challenge. Groups. Yeah, the challenges. And so, but they also, like, they do these fan meets online. And so even if you're an international fan, you can buy an album and maybe win a chance to talk to them in person. Mm-hmm. And you can win multiple times. So it's like, oh, my God, they remember me. They're my best friend because I have yeah. bought an album to win a chance to talk to them for a minute before.
Sometimes Minho, put in the
17, he needs oh. to start smiling because he's
no,
fighting
he's
for
funny
his
though.
Life.
I like I love him though, because if you look at his interviews, he's probably the only one where he's like, I'm not here to be your friend.
Nope.
I'm not your real. I'm not your boyfriend. Nope. He's like, I am a performer and I'll
he's
talk
an
to you
employee.
And I'll be polite. Mm-hmm. But he's like, you don't know me. Yes. And he's like, I'll be nice to you, but don't be acting like. And I think that's like a big thing.
I wish
like,
more idols did that, because that was establish a little bit more of a boundary.
Yeah.
Because some people straight up are like, this yeah. is my boyfriend. We are yeah. together, and
it's,
they don't know it.
The thing is, I can't tell because they're like they're micromanaged to
oh,
the
yeah.
gods.
Micro.
I can't tell if. They're allowed to.
Oh, like, to allow to put that boundary? No,
yeah,
definitely.
I feel like some of the ones
money.
That do
yeah.
are, like, going got... on a limb. The ones that don't, I'm like, I feel like they want to, like, Mark from NCT.
Oh, my God, Mark. Poor Mark.
Like, poor Mark. This one girl started singing or playing the flute or something. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. Like,
I've heard people reveal, like, their, like, traumas to them.
Secrets.
Like, yeah, like, their secrets and, like, the things that have happened to them. And it's like... Oh. I sing a song
about stickers.
Yeah,
about stickers, like a sticker.
Oh my gosh! I'm like, I don't think like as a like just me as a human being, I don't think I can handle that. Just like call after call after call, you don't know what's gonna happen. It's like Omegle.
It's worse, actually.
It's like paid it's Omegle.
You have to be nice to them.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like the more popular your group is, the more like freedom you have to be like, don't talk to me that way.
Right.
But it's like for those younger groups, the ones that aren't in these like big companies, because in Korea there's big companies, and if you debut in a big company, you're more likely to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not in those big companies and you're in a group that debuted, you have to work for your fans. And that part of that is, yeah, I gotta post these TikToks and I gotta take these calls and I gotta make those parasocial relationships, because if they don't like me, they're not gonna buy my stuff. And I want to succeed.
So crazy that the K-pop idol marketing is like, as the term suggests, idols. Like, you know, they don't call them like K-pop stars or like K-pop like performers, musicians.
Yeah, like, K-pop dudes.
Idols. I feel like that's so intentional, because you're not really like the intention isn't that they're human. They're like above human.
Yeah, they're like they're literally like a product.
Yeah,
that gets the amount of investment that goes into them,
because like their personalities are. Like, you don't know these people. Like, there's always like a nice one, a one that's like super dark and like
a bad boy.
Yeah. Even with the girls, they're like, oh, she's so girl crush. You know what I'm saying? There's always like the cute, smiley one. Mm-hmm. There's always like the clumsy one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I mean, that happens in the West too, like One Direction.
Yeah.
Even though it was like Niall was like the Irish one, yes. Zayn was the brown one, but like. That was still what it was. Harry was the pretty one.
The one Liam who wears the pants. One. The one who wears plaid.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was. It, but I feel like, especially in K-pop, it's so much more like market research based. or like, it could be completely different from like your personality, but they're like, you're this one, so you have to act like this anytime in like the public, which I know is probably really, really
crazy.
Hard.
Crazy. Yeah. Very, very hard.
And also, I recently found out about Bubble, which is...
Oh, yeah, Bubble.
I've heard it referenced, but I didn't understand how it went. I thought it was just like Kakao Talk or something, but no.
You're paying.
Okay, so from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Bubble is a subscription service that you can pay for that idols kind of post on there, like it's their social media, but they send messages directly to their fans, and they can use them at like a certain amount of frequency. They can just say hi, what's up, or good morning guys, like I'm eating soup or something like that. And that is insane.
It's wild.
Yeah,
like they're getting more money, but then that pressure to like interact with people on Bubble. But it's like, you're like, I don't want to be on my phone. That's extra content. Like, you're literally creating content like 24/7, and you never really get a break.
You are the content. That's what it is. Like, you are the content. Mm-hmm. And like, is Bubble like just SM?
I think it might be, because I know it's like
there's different ones, right?
I think, isn't JYP on Bubble?
I think so.
I know Stray Kids has a messaging service. Because everyone's like, oh, I'm going to pay my $6 to get all, like, and then I'm going to pay.
$6?
Yes, and it's not cheap. That's $6 a month.
Yeah.
A month.
I'm pretty sure.
And then, like, their contracts, at least for, like, Stray Kids under JYP, they only have to do one message a month. So imagine, like, you're paying that $6, and then you get one message, and it's just, hi.
Let's be fair. I would do that if I were Stray Kids, because, like, I don't want to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no. I think Bubble is JYP.
Bubble
JYP. And the thing is, like, the what is the word? The relationship that they have with the public is so invasive that it's, like, if you sue, like, people are, like, if they win, I'm still not going to stand them. I'm still not going to buy their stuff, because, like, all of this for what? You know what I mean? Like, people really do sympathize with the companies to a certain point. Mm-hmm. But it's like,
well, people will be like, well, I'm a HYBE stan. It's not like, oh, I like ENHYPEN or Tomorrow by Together.
That's a company.
It's HYBE. That is a capitalist country. They want your money.
Thank you. The same people who are starving these children, starving them. Starving them and making them dance for like 12 hours a day.
Yeah, the people who are debuting literal like 12-year-old
babies.
Again,
and they're getting younger.
New Jeans, the oldest one is my age, 2004.
Oh my god,
the youngest one's like
14. Isn't Minji like 14?
Yeah, or they're 14, 15.
The amount of investment that people have, to the point where
like creative directors controversy that they stir up just to get attention because it's such a saturated market.
Yeah. What is it? I know you kind of brought it up a little bit before, but I know you touched on kind of the racial movements, especially during the pandemic. Everyone is more on their phones, but at the same time, we're going through this huge like cultural upheaval. The second, what, like the 20,000th already. Everything keeps happening. We're living through too many historical events too often, and I can't handle it. In your paper, you called out President Donald Trump's Tulsa rally was prevented from being successful due to K-pop fans reserving the tickets and not showing up to the event as a protest against Trump's pro-white agenda. I remember this.
Yeah.
And that was insane.
It's wild. And then, like, you see his tweets and all the replies are just, like, a fan cam of, like, their K-pop idol. Mm-hmm. Like, it's wild.
Like, the way the camaraderie, the teamwork, it was wild.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like the only people who could, like, bully Donald Trump into submission is, like, a horde of K-pop stans.
No, literally.
Yeah. Because, like, let's be real. Donald Trump, he's eating the girls up.
Oh, yeah.
He's eating them up. He really like, is. Especially Ronnie. Like, Ronnie does not stand a chance against Donald.
Puddin' Ron.
But like,
Ron the Sanctimonious.
Like, Donnie really is eating the girls up. Yeah. But I feel like the K-poppies could probably handle them because
they've earned that
ghetto.
Reputation.
Like,
they've earned it. Yeah. They've earned it.
Because
they're
yikes.
Very rabid.
Yes, they're rabid. When they all get on one song, one voice, one accord, they get things done. Mm-hmm. All right. And I think that also that's another thing that ties into parasocial relationships. If the company doesn't do something that they want, they send protest trucks.
Yeah.
they will petition the high court.
There was like a recent thing too where it's like, oh my gosh, all the trucks they bought because it was a knife and Dancing with Girls.
Yes.
Y'all, they are grown men.
They are grown men.
Let them dance with that
Wait,
girl.
Who?
The Bite Me, remember?
Oh, yeah, Bite Me. And then, like, the K-pop fans sent, like, they were international fans. Mm-hmm. They sent, like,
international
trucks.
Fans, that's
yes.
crazy.
And I was like, y'all, the dance kind of ate. You can't
it
be
really
mad
did.
At them
and
for dancing with
it
girls.
It wasn't even the worst co-ed K-pop dance that has happened ever. The hive mind. Yes, that comes together. I'm sure it's fueled by those parasocial relationships, how they're all coming together for one goal. But I guess, can you kind of speak a little bit more about how that, aside from Donald Trump's rally, how they took that over, but kind of how that movement kind of influence those different things like the Stop Asian Hate and the Black Lives Matter movement, like kind of how those tie into each other.
Yeah, so I feel like these movements, they're minority movements in America, especially as my paper is focused on America, so that's kind of those protests that we're talking about. But you have these people who are already part of this community of K-pop. You have these likes, you have these interests, you formed your friendships, you formed that, like, Twitter, like, mutuals, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to follow you, you're going to follow me, I'm going to like and comment on your stuff. Mm-hmm. And when these events occur, people want to, like, speak out and do stuff like that. So, again, we're kind of talking about, like, they have that kind of hive mind, like, go against this. And I think because already, like, people in these communities, they know what it feels like to be marginalized. They know what it means. Even, like for liking K-pop in America, it doesn't matter who you are, what, like, characteristics you have. You're already in a minority for liking Korean music in America.
Yeah.
So I feel like they have these communities and they, like, they just, like, they find these comforts and community within each other and they use that to rise up against this, especially in, like, the Stop Asian Hate movement. Like, Korea is an Asian country. Mm-hmm. And so when you're having these movements, people who like K-pop are gonna speak out against it. Mm-hmm. But also, even if you're not into K-pop, I touched on it a little bit in my paper for the Stop Asian Hate movement. When you're trying to find community, it's going to lead you to these cultural products mm-hmm. that people in that community absorb and appreciate. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that, like, all just comes together from these cultural movements where it's like, we're going to band together, we're going to, like stop this. And then, like, because I'm already feeling, like a minority feeling discriminated against, I'm going to find communities mm-hmm. that, like, will support me. And some of them do end up being the K-pop community for some of these people because they can find comfort. First off, and, like, what we talked about before, like, parasocial relationships, comfort shows, but also just, like, in the people in those communities that are willing to speak up and know what it feels like. Mm-hmm. And I know I talked a little, I don't think I touched on it in my paper, but when I was doing research, a lot of people were mad at, like, K-pop companies for not speaking out. So, like, especially during the Stop Asian Hate movement, like, a lot of people were, like, emailing Hype, like, why is BTS not saying anything? So, like, they also band together because they expect accountability from the things that they like, or the groups they like, the shows they like, the actors they like. So,
yeah, I feel like BTS is a special case because they are, like, global ambassadors. So, like, with that, like, accolade comes, like, a certain level of, you gotta speak up. Like, you are kind of the face of, like, K-pop and, like,
They're the face, like, of, like, Korean-ness they're, like, at this point.
Yeah, basically the face of Korea. So, like, especially with, like, Stop Asian Hate and, like, and they're also, like, the face of the UN, like, too. Like, you gotta speak up. You can't be like, oh, yeah, oppression. Yeah.
And then also, because during that time, a lot of it, because the U.S. is the U.S., so any East Asian-looking person, if someone has a problem with Chinese people, they're just gonna assume that anyone that is East Asian is Chinese and target them. And so many of the people that did actually get really hurt were Korean and Thai and, Vietnamese, weren't even Chinese. I mean, Chinese people did get hurt as well, but especially when there were Korean people in those crossfires, I think people who are so into that Korean community, K-pop community, were like, y'all not gonna say anything? Like, these are the people. These are the people. So I think that was also part of it too. Like, since there is that parasocial relationship, they do expect that kind of accountability from the companies, and then also the idols too. Because it's like, y'all are, it's the people.
There's a bit of racism at play. They're like, oh, because I like and enjoy Korean media, I'm gonna support Koreans or like East Asian people.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not like as big of like, oh, I understand, I care about other cultures. It's like, no, these people are creating something that I'm consuming, so I care about them. You see what I'm saying?
It's transactional.
It's very like, yes, K-pop stans did a lot, but like, they're also like, there's room for critique, and we're like a safe space